Like notes from the hourglass, these are the songs of our lives.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I'm Brad Rose. I'm an artist, composer, a writer, the founder of Foxy Digitalis, and someone who thinks about music and sound far more than is healthy. Each week, I invite on a guest to talk about the songs and the music that has meant a lot to them and left its mark. Previous guests include Sean McCann, Randall Dunn, Charmaine Lee, David Garland, Ryan Sawyer, Patrick Shiarishi, White Boy Scream, Dorian Wood. I could keep going, but this week I am so excited to welcome back to the show the one, the only, Andrew Weathers. Andrew's got he's always got cool new stuff out, but this sort of big cause for celebration is the 10-year anniversary reissue, remixed, kind of, I don't know how you said it, but version of Fuck Everybody, You Can Do Anything. It's out now on Debacle Records, and it is an album that I do believe was ahead of its time, and which is, you know, a cliched thing to say, but hey, sometimes it's true, right? and it's just a great record. And the new mix, man, I've loved this record for a long time, but the new mix really, it just brings sort of new life into it and gives it, I don't know. When I listened to it for the first time, I felt like I was finally hearing the record as it was meant to be. And I think that's always a really cool and rewarding thing. So I can't recommend checking out enough. This episode was a lot of fun because Andrew picked mostly songs on that record, he, let's say, borrows a lot of lyrics, recontextualizes some lyrics, whatever. But a lot of those songs that are sort of featured on the record, he fit into the questions for the remix episode, which I thought was awesome. There's some stuff that's kind of outside of that, but that was really, it really focused the conversation. So this is a blast as always. It's always great to have people back on the show. I hope you all enjoy it. My guest today is a musician, a composer, an audio engineer, an improviser, a field recordist. I'm missing shit. I don't know. It's Andrew Weathers. Welcome back to the show.
Woo! Yeah. Thanks, Brad.
So you got a 10-year anniversary. That 10-year anniversary will make you feel old. Of Fuck Everybody, You Can Do Anything, which is out on October 28th. So this will probably be out by the time that is out. But whatever. On Debacle. Got a shout out, Sam. And you guys are doing a Tuesday release date. Hey, old school. Nice.
Yeah. You know, we wanted to, I don't know. It felt like, it felt more appropriate for this one. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. And also it's the timing. It's so funny. The timing, it's like a bunch of people are putting out records on Halloween, 'cause it's that Friday. Right. And right. So maybe we can just not bunch up against everybody and just do it on this Tuesday. So.
And Fuck, man, we need to go back to Tuesday release dates, frankly.
I love Tuesday release. It's a bright spot in your week, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, so 10-year anniversary. And so you've remixed it.
Yeah.
What was it like going back into these recordings 10 years later? I mean, what was that like? And what, like, I'm curious what you heard now, maybe that's not necessarily didn't hear then, but like that you felt like needed to be different as you were remixing it and redoing it.
I mean, you know, I was actually kind of shocked at how organized I kept the files. I was amazed that it actually was coherent, that it wasn't all that hard to parse out. Because it was going, like, everything was like a 20-minute jam that I had cut and edited sections out of. And so the files were kind of gnarly. The thing that really struck me was kind of how simple the the things were that, like, I remember doing so many overdubs and it felt like these really dense, crazy arrangements, but they're all of them are basically like 8 tracks, you know, there's not actually as much going on as it kind of sounds like. And I don't know. I think that's just maybe my memory of sitting there and redoing things over and over and over again in the, overdub phase. But you know, it's basically just like, I was engineering, like the recordings were engineered by a lot of different people because I was working out of these different studios, and the mixing was all on me. In those days, I really didn't have a good setup. I was mixing like a lot of times just on headphones in cafes in Oakland. And so, you know, that's kind of a train wreck. And it's not something I would do now at all. And I'm just a better engineer now. And so I just wanted to go back to it. It wasn't so much about fixing any particular errors, but just knowing that I could do a better job with the material.
So like when you went back into these sessions, did you like, are there things that you discovered in the original recordings and stuff that you'd forgotten about or things you heard differently?
There are a couple of like guitar parts and things that I recorded and obviously like left out, made a decision about that I put back in there. And I was like, actually I was onto something there. And then definitely a few things that I was like, that's a mistake. Take it out. You know, and there's some adjustment of soft synth tones and things like that.
Sure.
It's more just like less updating my taste and more just kind of following what I remember the original vision to be. And I think a lot of these things are subtle and probably things that no one's ever going to notice, but you know, it felt, if we were going to redo it, I was going to like redo everything that I could and just make sure that it's as good as I can make it. Cause there's also just a lot of like clicks and pops and like, you know, shuffling in that I wasn't paying attention to then, but now I would be paying attention to.
Sure. Well, I mean, if you're sitting in a cafe with headphones on and you have no clue. Yeah. One of the things I thought was interesting is how you mentioned like regret over calling it the Andrew Weathers Ensemble.
Yeah.
Because it didn't, you know, capture the collective work basically that y'all did with, working like revisiting this and working on this new version change how you thought about that collaboration?
I mean,
at all?
I think it pointed me in the direction that I've been feeling about it. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I started Andrew Weathers Ensemble when I was in college, probably 4 years before this record even came out. I was already operating under that name. And that really was a thing of just like, I was playing solo a lot. I started to bring in other people, but it was flexible enough that it wasn't a band. And so Andrew Weathers Ensemble name just kind of made sense and gave me some flexibility. Where there were some shows that we played that it was just like me and Eric, like two of us, like as Andrew Weathers Ensemble, it felt weird even then. But I think going back and remembering like when different people had it, like seeing other people's ideas and seeing how it actually kind of came together. You know, I am operating as like a band leader where like all of the decision making is kind of ultimately mine because I'm organizing the project, but like the process really is collective, like fucking everything is. And I think it's like, I think it would just make more sense to call it something that's not my own name.
Well, it's funny because I think like I relate to that, and then also in the opposite way where, you know, I don't know, I have all these solo projects. I'm like, just call everything Brad Rose for fuck's sake. That's all anybody thinks of it as anyway.
Yeah.
Sam gives me shit about that all the time.
It's confusing. But there is a thing that I like about that approach where you're like, I don't know what the difference between these two projects of yours are, but there's something in there for you that's making that distinction. And I like that kind of like idiosyncratic thing.
Yeah. Although as I get older, that becomes less clear to me. And I don't know, which is, you know, who the fuck knows? I am curious. So, I mean, I had moments recently of like revisiting things that are like 10, 15 years old and thinking about, I'm curious how it feels to like revisit this version of yourself through this remix and like you see in this, the like younger version of you that you're just holy shit.
it's hard. It's honestly hard. Where I'm like, dude, I was so fucking sad and like drinking too much, and I'm so glad that I'm not there anymore. And there is a thing that like there was so much good in those times and so much just like, you know, I was living in Oakland and had a really wonderful community around me playing our music, but also my music. And it in a way that like you can't access in your late 30s, you know, like you can't, no one can do two band practices a week in your late 30s. It's just not where we're at. And so it was a really special time to be doing that. But I just see like everything that I was going through then and that like, just wasn't being acknowledged in a real way. And I was just like doubling down on trying to keep myself so busy with music and like fucking utterly failing at that and not having any money. And like, not that I have money. It's like having less money than I do now. And it's it's the classic thing of just like, oh yeah, I was 24 and fucking stupid. And it's hard to look at, but also it's nice to come back and still be proud of the music that I made then.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that time in your life, we're gonna segue now into a whole new set of questions about songs.
Cool.
And I guess to start, as we do with the remix episodes, I think this is only like the fourth one of these I've done. I can't entirely remember. Yeah, I think this is number four. Okay. Well, what is the song? Oh, this is a good way to start. What's a song you wish you could hear again for the first time?
The song that I wish I could hear again for the first time is Rites of Spring, End on End. And like for this episode, I did want to choose song. I was kind of picking from the pool of songs that I was working with the lyrics of for the Fuck of Everybody record, that like all of those lyrics are pulled from things I was listening to at the time and things I listened to as a much younger person. That honestly, I'm still listening to a lot of this music. This is like what I hang out with. And Rites of Spring is like, you know, foundational, that discovering Discord and like that was the thing that, or one of the things that pointed me towards the direction that I'm in today, where it's like we found Discord and we're like, oh, we can start record labels, we can do bands, and it is serious even though we're teenagers or whatever. And Rites of Spring, like it's the classic thing where it's like it's emotional hardcore, and it connects to that intensity and that angst, and like End on End is just like a stunning tune, you know?
And one of the best bands ever. The thing I love about this song too is how it's also weird, like the structure of it. It's like, you know, oh, it's like super, it's like, yeah, fuck, this is really heavy and visceral. And then it's like, wait, there's these weird breakdowns in the middle. And I love that though, because it's like this, it becomes this sort of like the way they like harness tension. And then Guy is just like,
just the guy. Well, I was reading this book. I can't think of who did it, but somebody did this like collected like recollections and stories about Inner Ear Studios, and mostly like focusing on Don Zientara's engineering work. And he recorded a lot of the Discord stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's somewhere in there, they're talking about recording this record, and that like they were recording vocals with the lights off, or like multiple strobe lights going in the studio. It does sound like that. Just like complete like disorientation, this like intentional fucking yourself up to get the emotional pitch right. I loved reading that. It was amazing.
That's incredible. God, the strobe light thing is, I know, that is wild. Wow. Yeah. But it makes sense. Like, it weirdly makes sense. I don't know. Yeah. I would probably lose my mind, but I don't record vocals, so that's okay. Okay, so I think the next two you kind of combined into one. Am I right?
Did I? Oh, yeah.
Song that you hear, you'll get stuck in your head for days, is also seems to be your go-to karaoke song.
It's like, I haven't done karaoke probably since I lived in Oakland, so about 10 years. Man. And that's for the best. No one needs to see that. But I have done Drake karaoke. And you know, I accept this about myself.
Yeah. It's kind of, so because you picked the Take a Shot for Me, which is kind of a perfect karaoke song, because Drake isn't a very good singer.
Yeah.
And neither am I, and I'm guessing neither are you. No, you know, not, hope you're not insulted.
I'm not.
It really lends itself to people like us.
Yeah, it does really work. And like, this one has that kind of like bleak, solemn drunkenness to it.
Right.
Which is probably the appeal that made me pull the lyrics from this one. You know, and like, you know, I know Drake is kind of a piece of shit. We're aware of this.
Yes.
But the record Take Care was really big for me.
You know, I love that. I mean, I will still every once in a while go back and put that record on it.
The last time I listened to it, I was on tour with Hayden Pettigo, and we were somewhere in like Arkansas or something. And I remember driving around like a Walmart parking lot or something, looking for something, just blasting Drake, like this Drake record.
Yeah.
It's really funny that like, I think me and Hayden, like, we don't share a lot of listening, but Drake and Bon Iver overlap. It's like this strong.
I love it.
That
weirdly makes sense. Fuck Drake, but like, that record, it was a moment, like the time, everything, it, I don't know. And there are certain record, you know, there are certain times you got to try to separate the art from the artist. Like, I will still blast 808s and Heartbreak when I need to, and it's still one of my favorite albums of all time, even though we all know what's happened with Kanye.
But I mean, anyway, it's like this Drake record and 808s, like, that's shit that formed this particular record, you know, like those vocals. Great. You know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I even think too, it's like, you know, I think about so much of just even popular music or like mainstream music that came after. Oh, I mean, the 808s changed so many things, and God, people hated that record. But man,
it's my favorite, like, the only record.
It's same. It's the only, it's really the only Kanye record I will still listen to.
Yeah.
Okay. What is the, and this is the question that I was inspired by Wendy Eisenberg. What is the funniest or silliest song?
That rules. I love that Wendy inspired this. in this case, there's so many sillier songs, but in this bracket of time, the starting line, Best of Me, which
it's like being transported back to Hot Topic in 2003.
Yeah, this is like being 14 in Hot Topic, and thinking that's like subversive in some way, you know.
I have no experience really with this band, but this is the same thing as I like Screeching Weasel or something was for me when I was 14. Although hopefully these guys are like less of a prick than Ben Weasel, because speaking of dudes who suck,
Really? Oh no.
That's, oh god, yeah. I think I even think he may be like a MAGA guy now. I don't know if that's a true. And he was always kind of a piece of shit. I mean, the Queers in like 94 had a song that was like, the chorus was, it was, okay, Ben Weasel, he's an asshole. Ben Weasel, he's a jerk.
That's
amazing. So, yeah. And I think he may, at one point he was in the Queers, I think, or maybe they had the same
basis. I was thinking, there must have been so, there.
I kind of love the idea. It'd be, I mean, that's a hell of a move to be like, hey, you're in our band now, we're going to play this song on this tour. So you,
anyway, so you get to, I mean, you know, it's kind of Fleetwood Mac-y a little bit.
It is, yeah. It's, but yeah, bands that are, in hindsight, super problematic now. And, but yeah, sorry. So got off a tangent there. But yeah, the starting line, like, this is the early 2000s version of all
this. This is like mall music, you know. Mall like music. This is music that I really loved at a certain time. And like, I do this record of the starting line does not hold up in any way. But their subsequent two records,
okay,
Direction and something else, it's like solid mainstream rock music, you know, like, oh. I think that they're good songwriters, but it's like cornball shit, you know?
Yeah. Just right.
Like, you know, you hear it and you're just like, this is, for my luck, fucking one of these dudes will listen to this somehow and come after me, but it's just, it's cornball shit. And yeah, like they are, men in their 40s writing for teenagers still, and that's okay, like, do whatever, like, that's the audience. Like, I don't think that they're creeps, like, I just think it's cornball ass corporate rock music,
and people got bills to pay, you know.
Yeah, dude. and if you can pay your bills being in your little band, like, that's sick.
Yeah. Okay, what's your favorite opening track on a record?
Dude, oh man, I get to talk about the progress. Yeah. Nightlight Tornado Alley, Nightlife Tornado Alley. I love this band so much. You know, they went on to be in Into It Over It. Their main songwriter, Evan, I think he's the main songwriter, but the Progress were really huge for me in high school, kind of like in that New Jersey pop punk tradition. And like, it was kind of my first encounter with songs about being on tour and really that, and like kind of fantasizing and idolizing that life of just like being on the road and being in gas stations and like being in diners, that like this is a big part of my identity, is just like being a road dude, and this genre of pop punk hits that in a way that I love. Yeah
That makes total sense.
Yeah
I remember, I don't know that I had you had a Progress song on the first episode we did.
I have no doubt. Yeah,
a lot of this is like repeat offenders here.
My listening doesn't change all that much.
I understand. I mean, I'm the same way. Although lately my kid is in this K-pop rabbit hole, and I have gone all the way down with her.
That's awesome.
And it's a little weird because like some of these people are very young, and I'm like, I'm like, oh man, this group is awesome. She's like, yeah, they're like 16 and 17. I'm like, oh god, am I a creep? But anyway,
no,
I know it's. But as my wife says, she's like, no, the fact that you're going, oh god, am I a creep, is pretty good evidence you're not being a creep.
Well, I assume you're also like not harassing critics on their behalf. No. You know,
no,
like,
I'm just blasting it in my car, having the time of my fucking life. But yeah, the progress, like, if this had come out when I was in high school, I would have been totally fucking obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And even now, like, listening to it, probably the two times I've listened to it in the last year and a half to have you on this show. But every time I do, I'm like, man, this rules. And I'll listen to it for a few days. And
yeah,
like, yeah. Anyway, this is an awesome song.
Yeah, it's a great tune. It's a great tune. They do a great job, and it's like the guitars are huge. Like it hits.
Yeah, I love how it's produced.
Yeah. It's, and what I find frustrating is like the version of this song is, I don't know what's different about it, but I think it's a different version from what I used to listen to.
Oh man, I hate that.
It's like a demo or something else where like I have the files on my computer upstairs and it's like I can listen to it, but I'm disorganized in digital media, so I can't take it with me. But like there is what I think is a better version out there from a record that's not on streaming services. I don't know the story there, but there's something.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right, well, what's favorite closing song on a record?
Oscar Anchor. Oscar is one of my favorite bands of all time. I think that their record Idol Will Kill is like a perfect rock record. I think it's like it hits everything. The production is super bare bones, like, you know, two tracks of guitars. There's a couple little moments of synthesizer and the rest is just like rock music. And
oh man.
And there's this back quarter of this record is like three tunes in a row that I just think is the best ending segment to any record. And like Anchor, like it is heavy. It lyrically sums the rest of the record up. Even just the ending of the tune that ends with like just drums and you're hearing just drums for like eight bars and it just is somehow like deeply crushing. And it's like the whole Oscar thing, like all of the lyrics are like full like man or like boy teenage angst navel gazing bullshit. Like I see they're like very embarrassed about this music. I have like a giant Oscar tattoo on my side, you know, I love this band so
much.
And like it's total like male myopia, you know, where it's just like he's talking about like not being listened to, like, you know, being failed by everyone he knows. And like you read into that and you're like, this is all, you know, they were in this band, they're from Southern California. Signed to Epitaph when they were like 17, you know, they're kids.
Oh man.
Yeah. And like I think that their first record Treatment 5 came out when they were in high school, and like
wow,
you know, to be on a label like Epitaph in the early 2000s, like that's, you don't know how to deal with that as a teenager.
No. God, that's Jesus.
Yeah. Can you even imagine where it's like,
no.
Yeah, it doesn't even make sense. And like I think that you read that in the lyrics and it's like really scratches this like the boneheaded part of myself.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Hey, we've all got it.
We've all got it.
You can't totally ever outrun it. What's the most fucked up song you've ever heard?
Orchid Death of a Modernist.
I'm kind of amazed that there are actual lyrics here, honestly.
You know, honestly, this lyric, the lyric, when I die, 1,000 birds will fly out of my mouth, is the only lyric to that tune. It's fucking great. And like, if you, for all the AW heads out there, like that lyric pops up in like a lot of things that I've done, from Fuck Everybody forward, like that, like, it became something really intertwined with my own life that like talking about these like this like vomiting of birds and like that really became this like way for me to track death in my life, that like there's numerous experiences that I've had where these two things kind of come together. And it's really, I don't know, this one tune pointed me in the direction of trying to understand like my own mortality. I know that that's crazy, but like conceiving of things in this way, like, really has helped me a lot over the years. And like, it's popped up lyrically, it's popped up just in my own understanding of things. Again, I have a tattoo of like a raven in a mouth, because this is just like a big part of
I was gonna ask, like, it seems like such a good tattoo. So
it is a good tattoo. I had my dude Michael Shaw in Leveland, Texas do it for me. He's great. But yeah, it's fucked up. This song is like, that whole record, you know, I mean, is wild.
When I was listening to this, just like, God, how, I mean, the 30 seconds of the most brutal, like, violent, intense, 100,000 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then it kind of slows down, and it's like, yeah, you can't do that for more than 30 seconds.
No, I mean, dude, I'm amazed that these guys have come back and are still playing this music. You know,
yeah,
it's challenging music to play, and like, you can't half-ass it. So it's amazing. Yeah,
yeah, but also very fucked up. Okay, completely opposite. What's your favorite love song?
Belkazee, East Virginia. And this is a tune from the Harry Smith anthology of American folk music. That, like, around this time I was hanging out with a lot, and like, this tune in particular, Belkazee, I mean, his banjo playing is incredible, and like, this tune just has this like absolute like desperation and devotion that it is like really heartbreaking to hear,
honestly.
yeah
the lyrics are, God, my favorite line is the, "For I'd rather be in some dark holler where the sun refused to shine." That one,
yeah.
Is that the one you used? That might have been one of
those. Yeah,
yeah. God, as for you to be some other man's woman, never on earth to call you mine. Oh,
dude, I know.
That's so good.
It's so good,
and heavy, and brutal.
Yeah, and like a lot of folk music, it's presented in this way where you can just like, you just can overlook it. Like you,
yeah.
The heaviness isn't quite palpable unless you spend a lot of time with it, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point of how, yeah, the way, if you're just kind of listening to it, it doesn't land hard. But
totally.
Okay, what's a song you really love, but other people don't really get it?
I try to share this song with people all the time, and the band is I Have Dreams. The tune is Countless Rooftops. And this is one of those bands that, like, somebody that I was friends with in high school found it on Soulseek or Kazaa or whatever. And I have these like garbage MP3s, and they released, I think, about 17 minutes of music, and you can find it on YouTube. And it's just this one EP that they did. And like, the origin story is like, they were in this band. And I'm probably getting this wrong. There's someone out there that knows better, but like, they were in this band called A New Kind of American Saint, and also good, just like, you know, early 2000s hardcore band. And then one of the members of that band, 3 days before Christmas, which is the name of the EP, died in a car accident. Oh, and shit. So after that happened, you know, that's crushing. And I think that they were also kids, and they went on to form this band called I Have Dreams as like a tribute to their friend. And so it's like, you know, early 2000s, like, post-hardcore. I've seen it referred to lately as sasscore, where it's like two, like Blood Brothers style, like two screamers and then a band,
right?
And it's like, you know, the record sounds like shit. It sounds like total garbage. Like, he's trying to play hardcore playing like a Stratocaster, and you can hear it, and it's like this floppy like garbage guitar sound, and like the vocals are like really aggressively challenging to listen to, but it's like deeply powerful music and like youthful and aggressive and like passionate in this way that like I haven't quite heard in anything else. It's amazing. Like the whole record, and that it's awesome. Yeah.
I'll have to listen to the other. That's insane. What a
story. It's wild.
What a story. Yeah. The whole thing, it felt like, I don't know. I dug it. I felt like the chord progressions were so good. Like, yeah. I don't know what, and I don't, you know, it's probably nothing like complicated. I don't know, but it all felt a little chaotic and
yeah,
like it could just fall apart.
Totally.
And that's, yeah, and it is. It sounds like shit, but all of those things, yeah. Like all of those things, it's, you know, if someone was describing that to me, I'd be like, okay, yeah, cool, yeah, just yeah. Keep it coming. This
sounds like I think it just is this thing that you have to, that it has to hit you at the right time to really click, you know? Yeah,
right.
Because we all have those, like, no one has heard of these hardcore bands that we like,
right?
You know? That like recorded 10 minutes of music, but it's the best 10 minutes you ever heard.
Right. You know? And it's like, you had to be there.
I fucking wish that I was there for I Have Dreams. Like, I would have loved that. And now, you know, it's, people seem to have discovered it a little bit. Like the YouTube video has a lot of plays or whatever, but there's been no, like a sanctioned reissue or anything of that.
Right, like that. Yeah. Anybody have like what happened to any of them?
I looked into it. Like, I think the bass player went on to be in a couple bands of note, and like there's a couple people who commented on the YouTube video. There's like one in particular, because there's a bunch of versions of the record out there, but there's one in particular where people say like, you know, this kind of thing happened to the guitarist or whatever.
Okay.
But I think that none of them went on to do anything in particular which I think is beautiful, honestly.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. What is the song that makes you want to get up and move your body?
Dude, this is the dumbest song. I'm wakely, mildly interesting. Do you know this song? Or now you do?
No. I do. It's pretty dumb.
Dude, it's pretty dumb. It's pretty fucking dumb. I found this song as an Instagram reel. And like,
that's perfect. That's exactly where you should discover this music.
It's where the song lives. And it's like, it's like, it has this thing that like, I keep listening to it. And it's been this way for like 6 or 9 months, you know, where like something about it just makes me feel alive, where it's just like, it's got like the same kind of energy and passion that like I Have Dreams has, where you're just like,
yeah,
doing this shit. And like, you know, I've listened to everything else this band has out, and like, they hit gold with this one. Everything else they have is not nearly as good. And honestly, like barely even worth checking out, but like this one song, just, it hits the thing of just like being a great rock tune.
Yeah, no, it's like dumb, mindless, like,
yeah.
Just go for it. Yeah, no, I've never heard it, but it's, I was like, I can see myself like, this is gonna go on my like get hyped playlist, because it just makes me want to, you know, like,
totally.
Okay, I don't think you answered this one, so you got to come up with something on the spot. I guess
I knew I forgot something. What song that first you couldn't stand it, but now you absolutely love it?
That's the one.
Oh god, that's so hard. Hang on, it's my fucking phone. God, I mean, there's not a lot, because I tend to make snap judgments about things, especially like song music, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Like, I have a hard time with that.
I always think of like music that, like songs that, and I've talked about this a lot here, like I really like stuff that confuses me, that I hear it and I'm like, what the fuck? And often I go on, that becomes a thing that I absolutely love. I think for me, I mean, K-pop in a way has been like this thing of, and I'm it's mildly problematic how obsessed with like one band, like my entire hat, like we literally will save like TikToks that we, and like we gotta after dinner I'm gonna show you, there's this Oh, it's
dude, awesome.
It's kind of great too. But and yeah, it's
that's great.
But at first I was like, it was kind of one of these things where I don't know if I like, hate it. That's kind of strong. But I was like, this is not.
Yeah.
Like I like pop music, so this isn't my jam. And I'm like, oh. And the whole thing, how it all works, is fucking weird. And anyway, this isn't a K-pop podcast. So what's the song, Andrew Weathers?
Now I'm thinking the most recent thing. Sam Amidon has a new record, I think called Salt Creek or Salt River. And like, he is doing this thing. I love Sam Amidon. I love his first couple records. This one I heard, and at the first time I listened to it, I was like, oh no. He's falling off. Like, oh no, he's like giving into his like stupid like base desires. And he's doing basically like cornball ECM folk music. Where it's like there's a bunch of iwi on the record, there's a bunch of like weird MIDI shit with reverb on the record, and like a lot of it honestly sounds like crap. But and he's like recording the guitar. It's like an acoustic electric guitar recorded direct in.
Direct in.
Like cardboard ass sound. And it's but and so the first time I listened through this record, because I try to listen to everything he's done, I was like, I hate this. This is I think maybe he's over for me. But I think it's actually brilliant. Like he's bringing together some things that don't make any sense. Like he's
doing, I need to revisit it.
Have you heard it? Have you checked it out?
I listened to it when it came out and was kind of I was like, I don't think this is for me. And
you know, there's still some stinkers on there. There's some stinkers in there, but I think that he is making a thing work that doesn't actually work, and I admire that. You know.
I like that description too. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that I can't think of a particular song, but that whole record, it's like, I think that I'm still in the process of loving it, but
yeah.
I think it's like, there's really something there that like, isn't apparent at first.
That makes sense. I'll pick a song from it and
we'll
put it on the playlist, but yeah, no, that's a good answer. Okay.
Oh yeah.
We got there in the end. Hey, all right. So if you were either running for political office or a professional wrestler, what would be your entrance music? Legit works for both. It works
for both. And you know, it's like, I think neither of things are within any kind of real life in my life. I think I'm more likely to become a professional wrestler than I am a politician, which is funny because my brother works in politics and is a politician anyway. The song is Andrew WK Party Hard, which,
man,
it's such a good song.
Like, it is such a good song. This is one of those things that should not be this good.
It's you got every Florida death metal band to back you up to play party metal, which doesn't make sense and is so stupid. And like, but I think, you know, I'm also interested in like the persona of Andrew WK, the whole like, you know, he has the whole replacement conspiracy thing. But this tune is just like amazing. It's like arena rock that has no business being arena rock. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is so big. It is. It's so like the anthem of anthems.
Yeah.
I can't believe this. I don't know shit about professional wrestling, really, but like this should be someone's entrance theme. Like,
I have to think it is, or like some Andrew WK song is, you know?
Yeah. Like this is a whole character. This is a whole wrestling character. Like,
yeah,
come on, WWE.
I mean, it's like fucking Andrew WK has been a regular guest on like various Fox News programs. Why isn't he a wrestler himself? He should be going.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah.
I think that's that should be his next move.
Yeah. He's fucking.
All right. To end things on a high note, what is the song you want played at your funeral or your wake?
Oh, Death is the song. I would accept any version, but the Nimrod Workman version in particular is.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It's unreal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally unreal.
I think there's something kind of like having this played at a funeral feels like so audacious.
Yeah.
In the best way. And it's kind of, it's like saying like, look, I knew what was coming.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here we are.
Well, it is like the song of death. You know, it's like, this is what the fucking Grim Reaper sings as he's coming for you. Right.
Yeah. God. And that video of him singing it, and I didn't even realize, like, I was reading about it, that he was like 88 and he lived another like 11 years after that.
Yeah.
Hell like, yeah. Like, he looks like he's half dead in the video.
He looks like at death's door, which is, I think, why it works, you know? Like, you can't. I've ripped these lyrics for an old real life rock and roll band tune, but it's not the same, you know?
Yeah. No, there's a lot of great versions of this song. Yeah, totally. I think, God, I guess because there's the Doc Boggs version. I think that's what, Country Wi-Fi, we did an interpretation of the Doc Boggs version.
Fuck yeah.
Loosely, very fucking loosely.
but
that's a great version, but this is the version.
It's the version, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like really short. It's like what? Like a minute long or something?
Yeah. 45 seconds or something.
Yeah.
That's probably my funeral should be short. That's enough time.
I was going to say, yeah, that's it. It's like, come in 45 seconds. See you later.
Yeah. I think that could be the whole funeral. Like, that's all we need.
Yeah.
Like,
that's all we need. Then just throw me in the flames.
Yeah, dude. Just leave me in the desert, dude. Who cares?
Yeah.
It's all.
Well, that was a great uplifting place to end.
Good place to end.
But fuck everybody. You can do anything. By the time this comes out, it will be out. Anything else? You got a million things going on. Anything else you want to?
There's a million things going on, but fuck everything. Everybody is like the big one. You know, I'm just like, Sam has done such a good job, as you know. And like, it's been a really heartening experience to have that support. And I'm not saying, you know, I don't know if Sam's going to hear this or not. It doesn't matter. But like,
Sam will hear it. Sam's like one of the OG supporters of this podcast. The first ever real test episode I recorded of this that's ever been published was with Sam.
I love that. I love that.
Sam's my guy.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like Foxy and Debacle have run parallel lives for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, there aren't that many people who have been active in the underground scene as y'all, basically. You know?
Wow. Yeah. So. I was so stoked when he said he was doing it. I was like, because I didn't realize it'd been 10 years for one. I was like, Jesus Christ.
I know.
I haven't seen the records yet, but just listening to it, it sounds great. And I can't wait to see the records.
Thanks. I haven't seen the records yet either. I'm really excited. And it's like, I'm just glad. I'm glad that that somebody wanted to do it, because I do think it's like, now the record makes more sense than it did then, basically.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It is pretty wild to think it's 10 years old and thinking of all the things that happened like in the last 5 years.
I know.
Damn, dude, you're way ahead of your time.
You know, it feels more just like I was interested in things that people weren't widely interested in yet, you know?
Musically. Story of my life.
This is the thing. And like, whether or not that it matters to anybody, but it's like, I'm just glad to have a chance to revisit this shit, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, this was a blast again. Yeah. Thanks for doing it. Once again, thank you to the one and only Andrew Weathers. Pick up a copy of Fuck Everybody. You can do anything. You can also, of course, listen to his picks, link in the show notes. And yeah, I love doing these remix episodes. I think this is number 4 or 5. I can't remember. But hope to do more, you know, next year. I think the rest of this year is mostly figured out. But yeah, I don't know. Thanks y'all for listening. Please leave a rating, a review wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps with the algorithm, you know, all that bullshit. But hey, I want to get this
more people's ears, and that helps. You can also support through Patreon, patreon.com/foxysitalis, get ad-free longer episodes, or Ko-Fi. And, you know, if you want to throw a few bucks this way, just a one-time deal, that means a lot too. And all of it really helps offset the costs of doing this stuff. And anyway, with all of that, keep on listening to whatever the hell you want.